This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. And this is the start of the morning run going from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. this morning. It is the 15th of December and we're fast approaching the end of the year. I'm Sharad Kutan, of course. With me, Ibrahim Sani, bringing a bit of sun.
Yep.
In so, his sunny disposition.
Thank you very much.
Actually, Sunny would be your father's name, right?
Well, it's everyone's name, actually. I'm the sixth generation to use Sunny, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's unusual. In Malay society, kingship,
it is unusual.
Naming doesn't have, generally
it,
have
it,
Sunny.
It is unusual for the Malay society, but it
you're
is
an unusual family.
No, it's extremely common for... Minangkabau society, an extremely common thing.
Oh, I see. And so, you're Minang, are
you? Yeah, Minang. And everybody can get this. Everybody's buried in the same graveyard, even though they pass away elsewhere, like all around Malaysia.
Oh, and then actually the same plot?
The same plot, yeah. So, during Raya, I just bring my boy to the cemetery. And I'm like, okay, so this is Ghaffar Sani, this is Muhammad Sani, this is... And he's like, oh my God, all the Sanis are going to be buried here. So, he'll pop the question, like, if when you die, so basically when I die, right, are you going to be buried in Kota Mansara or here? So, I'm like, I don't know, when I die... doesn't really matter because I don't really care. And he's like,
but don't you care about tradition and custom?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I'll be dead when.
Okay, so it'll be left to your children,
my
perhaps,
children,
or your spouse to just make those.
My boy. My boy's name is also Omar Sunny, by the way. It's a Sunny.
I see. That's very interesting.
Very interesting, isn't it?
Okay, and also, not just interesting, but exciting, is what's going to happen at the Breakfast Grill at 8 a.m. You're going to be speaking to Mastura Muhammad Khaled. She's the Deputy CEO of Perbadanan Tabung Pendidikan Tinggi Nasional, or PTPTN. That's the affectionate... That's the acronym by which many people know that organization.
Yeah, if you go on the street and say, hey, do you know anything about Perbadanan Tabung Pendidikan Tinggi Nasional, you'll probably get blank stares because people really don't know the full name. People really know only the PTPTN.
Right. Now, and it's become synonymous with loans. So you think of PTPTN, you think, so did you get a PTPTN loan? That's kind of question that
absolutely.
Most people will
in
ask
fact,
and for which
you,
they will say yes.
In researching this group, last night, PTPTN auto completes on Google with loan. So,
does it?
Yeah, it does. And there's no like other like three or four suggestions. That's only one suggestion you're gonna get.
You know, some time ago, there was quite a bit of talk around PTPTN regarding people not paying, repaying their loans, and I think the ethical question or the question around ethics that was framed was, well, if you've taken a loan, if you've knowingly taken a loan, even if you're having a hard time, don't you feel a kind of moral obligation to repay that loan?
Yeah.
And should it be, and should loans be written off?
Yeah. And, the moral question is always there, right? Just yesterday evening, I was just telling my daughter, don't beat your brother because, and I was asking her, why do you think you shouldn't beat your brother? And she said, because I'm going to get in trouble. I said, that's not the right answer. The right answer would be you yourself wouldn't like to be beaten, because if you do something thinking that you're going to get out of trouble or get into trouble, that's not the point of a moral argument, right? So just like PTPTN, if you've
taken... So did she buy it? I mean, was she persuaded by your thing? I mean, was she moved by this idea that...
There's also punitive action being taken. So I said, if you beat your brother, I'm going to beat you up. So let's see.
Goes back to her argument. What about your argument, higher order ethical argument that you made, which is that she should feel, should empathize with him, not want the same kind of oppressive violence being...
I told her, right? So after all this, is done and sorted, she's still a girl. Your brother's going to grow up to be a guy and, at least muscular level-wise.
Oh, I see.
He's going to be
stronger
than you.
But that's only on average because there are guys who are smaller than some girls.
But anyway, back to the central argument here.
Brienne of Bath, of Taff, if you remember, Game of Thrones.
Yes,
yeah,
also,
she was a big girl.
And she
was tough.
And also the minister of...
And Littlefinger was really quite little.
In the, In the parliament, our parliament. Works that way.
Yeah,
hey, so PTPTN, they have financed over 2.5 million graduates individuals that have gone through tertiary education. So this may include diploma holders as well. And of course, postgraduate holders, PhD title holders and so on. So the question is only about 15 to 20% of them have repaid their loans. So fully. So the other 80%, they are either still repaying their loans or they have not repaid their loans not even once.
So they're avoiding repayment.
Yeah, and that's not right. Essentially, morally speaking, that's not right. But just like a delinquent child, you should be asking the child what is troubling the child. The child doesn't want to become a delinquent out of, you know, his or her own right. We should be asking these individuals, these, you know, 2 million individuals in Malaysia, why are they not repaying their loan? Is it because of the hard way of paying it, or because they just don't have enough cash?
Okay, so whether the management of the loan system is too cumbersome,
the economic situation, okay. Right? They don't have enough money.
Yeah, one of the other side of the PTPTN story, I think, is the one related to the institutions that have benefited most from it, right? So I'm thinking of private education providers. So, you know, you think of all those private colleges that have sprung up. If there wasn't a PTPTN system, would most of those colleges have survived, you know? Because in some ways, PTPTN is not a boon just to the students. It's really a boon to the colleges that, suddenly a huge cohort of students able to go to and avail themselves of those services.
And this is where the data surprises you, because private colleges, they don't necessarily get the entire payment from PTPTN. It's usually for public institutions. So last night, based on my research and our own researcher, Michael Gong, we found out that for private institution schoolgoers, there's not much money being involved as opposed to, in contrasting to, the public schools. So yes, you are half right in terms of the benefactors of PTPTN, but to be more accurate would be the public schools. Would be the public schools rather than the private schools.
Okay, so I look forward to this discussion. I think you've already tweeted this
numerous times, actually.
And trying to solicit questions.
Plenty of questions. Okay, so this is the fun part, right? So when I did when I blasted the tweet out and also on our own Facebook, BFM 89.9 Facebook page and so on, a lot of these questions come back, and a lot of these questions are troubleshooting questions, right? The FAQ type of questions. And the best person to actually respond to these type of questions would be Mastura Mohamad Khalid, the Deputy CEO, because she also holds the title of COO, Chief Operating Officer, and she also holds the title of Strategic Communications. So she wouldn't handle policy questions. She wouldn't be handling the question of, is it right for the government to, you know, spend 15% of our GDP on school financing. But she would be able to answer the question of, you know, how do I make my payment through this way? What kind of allocations is being made through this way? For instance, the budget 2017, can we get 10% off of our lump sum payment or 50% off?
Okay,
lump sum payment?
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, one also assumes that most people have the wherewithal to go to the website and look at the FAQs. Presumably, if they're of FAQ, you know, frequently asked question type questions, then answers should be readily available on the website. But I'm not going to presume that. Anyway, I look forward to this discussion, and I hope all of you, you know, if you are in fact a holder of a PTPTN loan and have not started paying back, or you have started paying back, could you tell us what you think about the whole system, and do you think there should be some debt relief for PTPTN loan holders, and what does it mean for those who actually made the effort to pay back their loans? Right? These are all the many entanglements that
there is a movement. People are starting to write in saying that why should the government give debt relief, when people like me, for instance, not me as in Ibrahim Sani, as in the person writing this to the newspaper, have spent you know, years repaying that loan, have toiled, you know, have taken a portion of their salary paying that loan. They have taken all these trouble to actually repay their loan. Why must other people get like some sort of an amnesty?
Yeah, and I think there's also something to be said for what kind of character is built, right? I mean, in terms of character building, what kind of people do you produce when you, you know, allow for this inadvertently, this culture of entitlement to take center stage, whereas this idea that, you know, once I agree to take a loan, then I'm morally indebted and I try my best to fulfill those, you know, and obligations, right? And so, that builds character, I think.
So here's the clincher. You can take EPF money out of EPF to pay the lump sum payment of PTPTN loan, and you can get up to 15% discount as quoted under the budget 2017. So that is something that I'm going to pursue at a personal level on my end. I'm going to take out my EPF loan and I'm going to take out my EPF money
from the second account
my second
two.
Account, and make payment.
Good on you, Ibrahim Sani. Your ancestors, you know, in Minangkabau land will be stirring. They'll be applauding, sitting up and saying, well done, young man, keeping the Sunny name pure. Okay, after the breakfast grill we have on Current Facebook, that's about 8:35, we have a discussion of the PISA report, because that's another educational ranking report that, and Malaysia, you know, didn't really appear on the top, and I believe, but the Malaysian Education Ministry came out saying that we are approaching the global average, which is to suggest that we're below the global average. Of course, Singapore, our neighbor south of the peninsula, came out tops. But there have been also some spectacular reversals of fortune. Finland, that used to, you know, do so well, saw an erosion in its ranking. So there's a story in all these countries that are involved in the ranking. I think there's a lot of soul searching that happens.
There's also a big article written by an educator on the New York Times arguing that the obsession of the PISA ranking has led to the degradation of the quality of the students from these high-ranking nations like Singapore, Japan, Korea, and so on.
Okay, we'll come back to that, I think, over the coming months. It's a perennial question, something that Malaysians, especially middle-class Malaysians, are very concerned about. Today on Ringgit and Cents, we have Tunku Ali Zakri alias, Deputy CEO for Strategy at EPF, and looking at various things, including the issue of delayed gratification and such. So that's on Ringgit Cents with Julian Ng. Now, a very quick look at the news over the last couple of hours when we've all been sleeping. New photographic evidence has emerged of significant Chinese military defenses on several artificial islands built in the South China Sea. We will wait to see how this story pans out. But it does affect, you know, some of the claims that China has made with regard to its the facilities it's been developing in South China Sea. Is it mostly for marine research and to facilitate, you know, ease
with
of
long,
maritime traffic?
You know, airstrips allowing for military aircraft to assist in the scientific research.
Yeah, so, you know,
Hashtag, yeah, right.
Okay, so these are complex questions that will, you know, and I see the story having legs for some time. Also in the news, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, he almost was out of the news for a while. But anyway, he's come back and said...
How can we leave him out?
Well, how can he not seek attention? Apparently, he's come out to say something he said in 2015, which is that he was personally involved in killing criminal suspects.
Yeah, but okay, so when he first won elections, right, I did tell you on air that he did kill somebody and he admitted, right?
Yeah, he kind of, half admitted. I mean, I don't think as much.
No, he fully admitted even then. So I don't know why now he's saying it again suddenly.
Well, he was saying it, I think, to a group of policemen, but no, businessmen. I think he's just trying to establish that he is
a murderer, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in the mold of somebody who's a vigilante for law and order. And so, okay, so the argument and the discussions about the Filipino situation continue.
Like Texas,
but anyway, he's, you know, put himself back into the main headlines by issuing that statement yet again. Now, we'll be right back with more on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues, and that was Ooh La La by The Faces. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Ibrahim Sani of the Sani clan, as I've just discovered and we've all learnt. Now, also in the news, just a quick roundup of some of the news that, and this is actually kind of good news, Ibrahim, which involves two long lists. One is of teacher Muhammad Sirhajwan Ide.
Sirhajwan
Idek of Sabah. He's one of 50 in the running to win $1 million US dollars in the Global Teacher Prize, awarded by the Varki Foundation. Would say something about, you know, his training, maybe something about him personally. I haven't read enough about, you know, his background and why he's made it to the list.
Okay, so this this is a long list as opposed to a short list. The long list that Cikgu Sirhajwan is actually being nominated for is presented annually by the Varki Foundation to an exceptional teacher who has made an outstanding contribution to the profession.
And right, so this is kind of the tagline. I mean, but the question is, what was his exceptional contribution to the teaching profession?
A quick read through the NST article, actually, last night, just before going to bed last night.
Such exciting reading do you have before you go to bed?
No, I mean, like, this is something that shouts out on your Facebook timeline, right? I mean, I read this in the same measure as I read Rogue One, you know, Star Wars. They call this candy, you know, something like
eye little candy? Things.
No. Something like this, you know, Easter egg argument.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You know, that. Yeah, like I said.
So what did you learn about him?
He's a chemistry teacher from LaSalle, PJ. He has done...
No, that's not true. He's from Sabah. It is the Yastia's shortlisted person, Yasmin Nurul Amin.
So Sirhajwan has... his students have continuously perform in not just exams, but also in other areas outside of his classroom. So the NST article argues that there is something holistic about the way he teaches that resonates extremely well for his students.
Okay. So, and then we have also the story of a Malaysian singer, Yuna, and she being long-listed for an Oscar. And this is because she, I believe, sang in the soundtrack of a documentary, if I get it right. The song called On Ghost Ridge was written by composer Nicholas Pike.
Mm-hmm.
And for the movie 100 Years, One Woman's Fight for Justice.
So I don't know much about this, but this is among the 91 songs that have been longlisted by the Academy of Motion Pictures Society. And, you know, to be nominated is already an interesting portion of it. But, I mean, the reality of things is that she's one among 91.
Yeah, but, you know, think of it this way, right? I mean, in a news cycle that's often bereft of happy news about Malaysia, you know, we, of course, had Harith Iskandar recently winning that funniest man in
the
world.
Which quickly turned controversial, right? Yesterday he was, it's very silly actually, in one of the Instagram posting, he slapped on a windbreaker or a jacket with a Johorian flag, and he says that, you know, he's so proud to be Bangsa Johor, this particular sweater or jacket was given to me by TMJ, or the Crown Prince of Johor, and he's proud to be a Johorian. And, you know, he's keeping the flag high or something to that effect in Helsinki, Finland. Immediately, people started attacking him, saying, oh, how un-Malaysian of you to promote Bangsa Johor when clearly, you know, we should be promoting unity, you know, along those lines. And of course, he has come out to defend himself on Esrawani, which is his platform, because his show, obviously, Harith is on Esrawani. And he says that, you know, I'm done, you know, appeasing everyone. Because if you notice, when I took the award, I slapped on the Malaysian flag on me. I have, you know, unfolded the Malaysian flag on various occasions at various parts of Helsinki and Finland. And all I want to do is just to do one posting on Bangsa Johor, and here I am being criticized.
Attacked. Well, you know, honestly, the question that one can pose to those critics, and I speak as somebody from Johor. Ibrahim, you're also... Yeah. You're from Johor, but you're actually Minang, is that?
Yeah, okay.
This complex ancestry that
it's
you
not
have.
Complex. My dad is from Kuala Pilah. My mom is from Johor Bahru.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, Johor Bahru rules, by the way. All I can say is that, you know, it's not a kind of either or, right? It's not like it's, especially in a federation, right? So if you think of the political setup that we have in this country, we do in fact acknowledge several layers of government. There's no problem being talking about being from Johor, you know, loving the state of Johor, and also being part of this larger federation called Malaysia.
So
it's sad that it's turned controversial for Harith. He should have returned to Tanah Air without much controversy. And he appears in some of the newspapers' front page. I think Utusan has him there on the front page. But so there, Yuna, a Malaysian singer who also has had to deal with some inane criticisms of her or questions about her personal life, being out there in America. So she's featured, as you said just now, featured in a documentary on Native American rights, longlisted for the best original score song for the Oscars 2017. Now, you mentioned just now, and we thought it would be kind of worth talking about, is Rogue One. It's trending on Twitter. It's, of course, the newest part of that endless series of Star Wars movies in the Star Wars franchise. And I believe Ampika Pagan, who is, of course, with the Evening Edition, he's going to be talking about Rogue One on his show called At the Movies Tomorrow. So you can catch that if you're interested in it. But, you know, as somebody who grew up on the franchise, all I can say is... I thought that, it had the basic template, of the little guy fighting the big guy, and the little guy, unfortunately, always triumphs. I mean, this is the unfortunate thing. You know, because if they don't triumph, then it's sort of like,
There is this very interesting, I would call it interesting article, that talks about how the... Star Wars guy, Luke Skywalker, is like training a jihadi. Have you read that article? Everything about Luke Skywalker is exactly the same as how you would train a jihadi.
Wow,
in, say,
lifting lifting a spacecraft with your mind power. I don't think so.
Yeah.
The Force is not with ISIL.
Yeah. So anyway, I will share that particular article because of the parallel.
Luke Skywalker worked for the light.
So
for the good.
So Uma Pagan will talk about Rogue One at the movies. It's an Evening Edition program tomorrow at 6 p.m. Right
6
after
PM.
The news.
Okay, 6 p.m. So you can catch that. And not to preempt anything, we don't want to, have any spoilers inadvertently slipping out. But just to say that I watched it last night and I thought it was worth the watch. But then I'm kind of hooked on the franchise and I don't know if I even think about it. Like I go for every Bond movie that's ever produced just because, And so there you have it. But something that you should be waiting with bated breath for every morning, which is the first bulletin of the day. And we have Lynn Mark poised at the mic for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run, and that was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers with Anything That's Rock and Roll. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Ibrahim Sunny, taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning on The Morning Run. It's the 15th of December, it's about 10 days to Christmas and about 15 days to the new year. So if all of you have holiday plans, I'm sure you're you're kind of excited about that. So, okay. Breaking news, though, Ibrahim, well, just come on the BBC World Service website, is that Yahoo has admitted to a hacking attack dating back to 2013, involving more than 1 billion user accounts. This is different from a previous hacking attack, which happened in 2014, but only made public this year in September, that involved half a billion people.
So it's breaking news because this is a new announcement made by Yahoo.
Yeah, it's not the actual attack.
I see. So 1 billion user accounts have been affected, and they say that this attack dates back to 2013. This is separate from the earlier one that you mentioned just now, which was affecting half a billion users, and it was made public in September. I remember very vividly watching Stephen Colbert making fun of this, saying that, oh my God, now my Yahoo account is, you know, hacked. Let me change my password. And he made, you know, he just exaggerated the whole point, right?
Because of the delay in the announcements.
Because it's Yahoo, Sharad. I mean, when was the last time you ever used Yahoo?
Ah, I see. Okay, poor Yahoo. Okay, it's a brand that's taken quite a beating.
Yes.
And perhaps is fading as a star in the, you know, in the virtual firmament.
Not to take away anything from Yahoo, but...
I think. If it's Gmail, then we all be in a real panic.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Okay.
But didn't you have a Yahoo account when you were younger?
Yeah. In fact, believe it or not, my username was Skaterboy, as in B-O-I.
Wow, you were so cool back then. Cool is spelled K-E-W-L.
Oh,
cool.
God. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about these two instances, you know, one of them involving a Malaysian and another an Australian. But the same sort of thing happens, which is one day you look at your bank account and it's got a couple of million more than it should have. And the question is...
A couple of million more.
And the question is, what do you do? So a young lady from Malaysia... studying in Australia, she was doing her degree. She found that she had a couple more million than she should have in her bank account. And she thought, and this is her, what she's saying while she's standing trial, is that, I thought my parents sent me some extra cash. And so then she went on a shopping spree that I think the amount was something of the order of 4.6 million Aussie dollars, and she just sort of like spent it all, you know. And there's another story which we can tweet out, is, and the headline reads, "The bank lent me $2 million, so I spent it on strippers and cars." You know, the point is, a mistake was clearly made. And instead of
owning up
and, you know, it's not your own mistake, it's somebody else's mistake, alerting the bank to the mistake, you think, well, I'm just going to spend that money until they say something. What do you think? What's your first response to this? I mean, so her defense is that her parents sent the money. She thought her parents sent the money. And, you know, if my parents sent me a couple of million, I would have written a nice little card and said, thank you, mummy and daddy, for the extra million you put into my bank account.
I'm just going to call her out, right?
Don't do that.
But if it happens to me, right, I think, you know, all this has to be accounted for. Even if somebody wrongly sent even $1,000, right, into my account,
it doesn't become yours. It's not finders keepers, losers weepers, is it?
It's not. It never is. And the question is, somebody will come calling, whether it's today, tomorrow, or the year after that, or if even, you know, far down the line.
So what do you think is going on in the minds of young people, or anybody for this matter? It doesn't have to be young.
Okay.
The person who finds it, what do they think? Are they thinking, I'm not going to get caught?
Actually, age does play a role, Sharad. If you think about it, I can even quote you another story. Story where an elderly couple, same story, it's a joint account, it was wrongly credited into their account. This elderly couple immediately went to the bank and alerted the whole story, right?
How did this make it to the news? Because stories like that never make it to the news.
And it's actually in the UK. So age does play a factor. This young lady, this Malaysian lady that you speak of in Australia, and that young lad that spent on what? Hookers and strippers and cars, right? They're young. And I can't say much when I was, you know, 21, but I put it this way. If I was 21 years old and money was really, really hard to come by, when I was 21 at least, and somebody says, you know, hey, you know, you got $2 million in your account, most probably, you know, I probably spend it. Yeah.
Okay, so if you have a kind of idea, a theory of what you think is going on in the minds of people who get money mistakenly credited to their accounts and then go on to spend it, you know, tell us. So you can send a tweet to BFM Radio, or you can, in fact, text us at 016-201-9000. That's 016-201-9000. Tell us what you think was going on. I do think this trial is going to be quite important, because it's going to alert everybody to the fact that you can't get away potentially with this, unless she's found not guilty of fraud.
Right. So this again talks about owning up, right? So there was a story. Remember that game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It was really, really big, you know, at the turn of the century. Even
it
we
sound
had,
like it was such a long time ago.
Well, yes, it was at the turn of the century.
Yeah, about 15 years ago.
15 years ago, yeah. Okay. You know, we had our own version with Jalaluddin Hassan as the host. But anyway, the story is about this person, a contestant, and she had her computer wrongly rigged. The technical people put a cable that is meant for the host of the show. So that means throughout the entire program, she was constantly seeing the correct answer, and she just chooses the correct answer every time a question was asked. And she didn't own up, right? Obviously she won the $1 million. And she, you know, after winning that particular show, they did an audit, and they found out that the computer was wrongly rigged, and she was being alerted of the correct answer
the
whole time.
Okay, so did she have to give the prize money back?
Yes, she has to give the prize money back.
Oh my goodness! Okay.
After much fanfare of celebrating her win.
Oh, you see, my thing again is, what is going on in the minds of the people there? Do they think that this advantage, which they've secured, you know, not by their own means, but it's sort of a mistake, you know, that somehow they're going to be forgiven if they just go along with it? I mean, do you think that's what's going on? Could it be something quite innocent and, you know,
We're talking about,
I mean,
innocent.
There's an amount of fraud. I mean, what do you think? I mean,
because, you know, to determine a fraud is to determine the intent. Did these people, willingly and knowingly, schemed to cheat and deceit?
So see, they didn't, right? So they didn't set
they
it
did
up.
Not.
She didn't do the. She didn't get her friend
they
to come and
not.
Rig the
they,
computer
they
system,
did not.
Right?
So this is.
But she's still liable, right?
Yeah.
She's still. There's a kind of moral failing on her part, isn't
that's
there?
That's the point. So the theme for today is on the moral failings of individuals owning up to their crimes or errors committed by other people. So it's timely because we are having PTPTN over for the Breakfast Grill later in about 1 hour from now, because everything is about the moral question on PTPTN.
And in a country where, you know, we have leadership by example, we can expect everybody to be quite moral. The news is coming up next, but first there's Better Man by Pearl Jam, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.